Good morning.
Hey, Michael, how are you? Bob Banks here.
Okay. Can you speak a little bit louder?
Sure. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we want to get on with this. I had appended a few additional questions over and above the first list, and maybe we can just begin with those.
Okay.
I sent you, I think last night, a little chart that looked at this structure, and so I thought visually it might be helpful to have that in front of you when you talked about these issues. The basic questions we have is really the meaning of the definitions and whether you have a sense of how you decided which bucket to put various grievances in, and whether you had any sense whether your mode was the same as previous FGOs, because this data was collected every year since the in a chart like this, year by year, in every annual FGO report.
Right.
So, and let me just try to firm them up, because I did put them, I think, in an earlier note to you. When you have grievances one, informal, and then you have grievance satisfied, and one of the questions is if you could define what your sense was of the meaning of these categories and whether they were overlapping categories or they were really freestanding, separate one from another.
No category was overlapping. They were separate.
Okay.
And the reason we put in, I know that Lash and I use the same category because he's the one who really taught me how to categorize items. I can't tell you if Brady or John Rivette or anybody else who held a job did it the same way. Satisfied means the grievant didn't win but didn't lose either. Yeah. They just got a solution that was satisfactory to them.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
We had several instances where somebody, for example, stated a specific amount of money that they believed they were owed, and the panel recommended a solution, a remedy that was different than what they asked for, but the grievance then did not appeal, was satisfied.
Okay. Now, what about grievance won or grievance lost informal? What does that mean?
That means that I was able, through mediation and compromises, to settle it without a hearing.
Okay.
In other words, it's the absence of a hearing that determines whether it was formal or informal. You had those right, Bob, when you asked me the question. You laid it out, and it was right.
Okay.
The categories that you have right, the only question you had was about satisfactory.
That's correct. And I have one other on this list. When you look at grievant one,
can't hear you.
Okay. If you looked at grievant one or lost, did you include the outcome of appeals in those totals?
No.
No,
it was always the final. It was always the final outcome. There was no double counting, Bob.
Okay. So that you would include the result if someone appealed and whatever the result was from that in the bucket which was won or lost in terms of a grievance.
That's correct.
Okay.
Michael,
I deliberately avoided double counting.
Okay.
Did the voice level get too loud now?
No, it's fine.
Okay. Because he adjusted it, so I'm hearing Bob yelling at me.
Yeah, okay.
Yelling at you, but I'm hearing him.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. We've got a couple of other questions that I sent you before John goes to his list. We're looking at measures of effectiveness of the procedure, and there's a guy named Esty from years ago from the university, the Wharton School, who did a survey, went around and talked to people in the Big Ten schools. And one of the variables he has is timeliness. you know, it was the length it took between an initial contact and the final resolution of it. Do you have any sense of that? I know that hasn't been specifically noted or calculated in all of this.
Correct.
But do you have any sense of that?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a difficult one. It's an important one. It varied, of course, by the kind of case that we dealt with. I would say that we have to come up with some kind of an average.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I would say the average was between, I'd say closer to 4 months would be my estimate. That is from the filing of the grievance until the end of it. Of course, those on appeal lasted longer. They are very generous in our grievance procedure, as I recall. They're very generous deadlines. They're up to 30 days in a couple of instances, right? So that people can take advantage of the time. And sometimes you run into difficulties in terms of establishing a panel or finding chairs who would lead the panels. Or to get the panel chair to submit a report. So there were certain factors that and variables that seemed to prolong the process. But I would say on the average, I would say closer to 4 months.
Okay, that's very helpful. Let me move on to a couple of more. Do you have an impression over your years of service of how often, following the conclusion of the faculty grievance procedure within MSU, people went to court to try to litigate the issues if they lost?
I suspect that you can count them on one hand. Very rare.
That would be my impression as well, but I wanted to get your feeling of it. Okay.
That's correct. Now, it's possible, Bob, that some people did, in fact, pursue it outside, but never informed us.
Yeah, I understand that.
Right. But my feeling was that the losing party seldom went outside.
Okay, that's very helpful. And my last ad hoc question is... there has been a procedure that has gone back a number of years to actually do surveys of individuals who've interacted in a variety of ways and modes with the grievance procedure annually. And I want to ask you, when did the collection of data that way occur? Was it at the beginning of your service, or was it earlier? So that's one sub-question of that.
Let me understand. What are you asking?
I'm asking about the annual reviews of the FGO, which in part was interaction with UCFA, but also a survey of users of the procedure. And I'm asking when that occurred, when that started, because in the early years there was no such review of that sort. And ask whether that was something that you pursued or played a role in shaping whether it should be done and what the questions were and so on?
That's a good question. I really don't know.
Do you think it existed before you, Michael? Because
I
thought you told me you started it.
There could be. I think that if I started it, obviously the minutes of the UCFA should really be helpful here.
Well, the minutes of the UCFA don't exist prior to 1988. They were done by members of the committee, and where they are, the archives can't find them. So we've tried to consult those, and that's just a gap. That's fine if you don't know. My impression...
No, I think it started... I know that it started under my administration, but I don't want to take credit for... being the originator of this proposal. I think it came from UCFA.
Okay. That that I think is interesting. There was a survey, as was done at the end of the five-year period, for Dr. Mary Lee Brady. That's been lost somewhere. I know it was a very, not a very positive review, if one can say it modestly, but that was done because there is evidence that the UCFA asked people to participate in it. The follow-up question is, you, I assume, got those annual surveys, right?
Yes.
Okay. And what use did you make of them?
If there were specific suggestions made about possible changes or amendments, I used that as a basis for formulating proposals that eventually went to first UCFA and then to academic governance. And I think there were a couple of instances where such proposals were made. Other than that, it's just was feedback for me, and that was it. At least I knew that I was where I was with respect to academic governance and how effective the system was.
Okay, that's very helpful. John, you want to add on any of these categories?
So, Michael, I'll try not to be too duplicative of when I interviewed you years ago. But we have that, and that in all of these interviews of FGOs, presidents, provosts who were involved, some general counsel, are all online. And if you either go to the person's name or Bob's or my name, you can listen to them, by the way. Could you just remind me again what years you served on UCFA and what capacity?
Oh, God.
Never mind.
I don't know the exact, nope. The exact year.
But early 80s, right?
Yeah. I was a member of the committee, and then eventually I became the chair of the committee.
Yeah. When I interviewed you before, you said you started at Madison in September of 70. You got involved a little bit in governance there, a faculty, FAC, and then got involved as Madison's rep to UCFA several times. And then you said during early 80s you got on UCFA.
That's correct.
Were you on UCFA all the time until you applied to become the FGO?
Yes.
Okay. That answered that question. You've probably stated this before, but a short summary. What led you to be interested in the FGO position?
Well, as a member of UCFA, I was very interested in the kinds of issues that our committee dealt with in terms of personnel, and I thought that I could make a good contribution given my academic interest in conflict resolution.
That's where I was going next. Was it education or experience in conflict resolution?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And
I was also concerned about the welfare of the faculty at the time. Remember, the university underwent a financial crisis.
Right.
And I was really concerned about the lack of a union at that time. And so I saw the grievance procedure as the best possible alternative in the absence of a union. And so I thought that that would be a way in which I could really try to make use of that procedure and see whether or not we can balance the power of the administration vis-a-vis the faculty.
So I didn't mention it earlier, but I also did some interviews with a couple of the union activists, Phil Korth, Gladys Beckwith, Dorothy McMeekin, and they all kind of would say something like what you just said.
Uh-huh.
Though they were, you know, and Coletta Mosier, that they were all, you know, more active leaders in the unionizing effort.
Yeah.
if you were talking to somebody where you now live or just whatever, but someone who doesn't really know anything about the MSU grievance procedure or the FGO, how would you briefly summarize to them what's the job of the FGO?
Well, it's to make sure that faculty and administrators have a way of coming to some agreement through treatment that is fair to both sides. That's the way I would phrase it, and I think that's the way I approached it myself as FGO.
I was intrigued that you used the word mediation. I would also, as a labor relations person, use that. Interestingly, they've now sort of changed the name of the office to stress that even more. Did you use that word back when you were FGO, or is that more like looking backwards now you would say that? I mean,
did you tell somebody?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I used it very often. The other word that I use very often is compromise.
Uh-huh.
And another one that I use very often was my favorite one because I'm familiar with what Henry Kissinger did, and I called it shuttle diplomacy.
Okay.
And that was running around from my office to the office of the administration and back.
Mediation, compromise, and shuttle diplomacy.
That's correct.
It's fascinating, Michael, because as Bob and I have done some interviews with the current staff and FGO, and I don't want to be overly critical, it seems as though they think they invented mediation to dispute resolution.
Okay.
And I think it's because right before Bill Donahue came in as FGO, Sheila Tehan, who had been an activist with AUP, maybe was a little more pro-worker than some of the other FGOs had been.
Yeah,
and she had some difficulties with June Hewitt. So,
yeah.
And so that came up. So that was one of my questions there. What would you say to this person was the most positive aspects of the job? And then the next one is what were sort of the biggest disappointments, setbacks, or challenges?
The most satisfactory aspect of the job was in cases, the result of cases where we actually were able to reach through mediation rather than through hearings, results that were satisfactory to both sides. And that occurred, to my surprise, rather often. The disappointments were especially, I would say, in those instances in which the original hearing panel ruled in favor of the grievant and the administration at higher levels overturned it without really the kind of reasoning that I found as persuasive.
Thank you. That certainly is that one. If you were, again, this person you're talking to, if you, they said, well, so how did you actually spend your day or your week or months or what activities did you spend most of your time on?
Most of my time, without any doubt, was running around from my office or, from my office to the administration, trying to talk to the people that I thought would be able to help to resolve it informally and again through mediation. That was a great deal of time. And also, I would say the second most important one was I developed the habit of writing the preliminary parts of reports that are the standard introduction, right? So those parts of the report with the background and what the issues were, and then let the chair of the panel finish up. So that took a lot of time also. But I would say by far the greatest share of spending time was in what I call the shuttle diplomacy.
would you, so I'm just going through my list, Michael. I don't know if you want me to say the number, but six is, do you say anything about the extent of support, university administration, provost, president, general counsel provided to you in doing your job?
Excellent. I never had any complaints at all under different administration at the president's level and the provost. I never had any problem, and also legal, the legal office was extremely helpful. I remember from day one, in the job, I needed to go to a chair and ask for specific information about an individual faculty member in their college, to find some confidential information about their salary level, to confirm that, and the administrator, who was the chair of the department, refused to do so. And I immediately went up to a legal office, explained what my difficulty is, and the next afternoon I had the information.
So I think I mentioned when we did some interviews, we did interview Bob Noto and Christine Zacho.
Uh-huh.
So was Noto the main person, or was it some of the other assistants that you worked with?
Noto was one of the persons. I don't want to say was the main. I forget who was before Noto.
Mary Beth Kurz?
Yes. I relied on her as well. Noto was, in my judgment, much more receptive to my request for assistance, but I was really never turned down as such. It just took longer under Kurz.
That makes sense. When I took the job, we had this problem of what I called the frequent filers, the two gentlemen that grieved everybody. And it was about half of the workload I inherited. And so there were a lot of meetings with Noto, because in their many grievances, they would name the provost, the president.
Yes.
Send stuff to the board of trustees, et cetera, et cetera. So it got him more involved. Cases that weren't with those two gentlemen, there were really like maybe three different staff working for Noto, who this person, Mike Kiley would get a case over here, and that sort of thing. But that's what you were talking about also, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Michael, something that was very different in your time than mine was the use, this is number nine, the use of department and college hearings as well as university ones?
Yes.
I'm sorry, it's not nine, but can you just speak to that?
Well, the procedure allowed for that, and I determined the level by the kind of issue that was being raised, and to see whether or not it would be appropriate to have one at a higher level, if in fact it was a departmental kind of an issue that should have been resolved at the lower level. So I always went by the nature of the grievance, who the respondent is, and that determined it. And of course, our own procedure laid out what, you know, that there should be, we should not jump up to a university level when something could have been resolved at a lower level.
So when there was the transition from Rubner to Rivette in the middle of 2004, I didn't have a sense that you had hardly any department or college hearings anymore. Am I incorrect on that recollection? Because I...
That's about 15 years ago.
That's fine, Michael. Doesn't matter.
No. I'm trying to figure out. When do you think that trend started?
I just think by the time I started that there'd hardly been any of those, and I thought it didn't make much sense. And subsequently, kind of maybe... Bob Banks, that have better recollection than I do, worked us out of doing anything but university hearings, because I didn't think it made sense to ask closer to immediate colleagues what they thought about.
Yeah. Just as a side note, as part of a general review of the procedure that John and others participated in, which I would say is 2005 or 6 or something like that, the procedure was changed to say you'd only have central reviews so that the provost was the respondent in all cases.
Yeah. Well, I suspect that probably the major reason would have been the nature of who the respondent was. And the respondents became increasingly deans and provost and president.
So we set on this? We don't quite know.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to stick with 11 and go back to 9 later. So another one in 11 I said was C. The university indemnification policy and coverage of hearing panel members, counsels, and the FGO?
Yes.
That came up in your time, correct?
Yes.
And what was the issue and why and how did you work on that?
That's a good question. I tried to remember. For the life of me, I would need to go back to my report, if it's covered in the report. It must have been covered by the by one of my reports.
It is. It was unfair to ask you, I guess. Bob can speak to this also.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to follow up on a particular point. If you go back in the history of the grievance procedure, the board took a position, although it was not made part of the policy itself, that members of hearing committees and councils would be protected by that university policy. Then there was a case that you may remember, and Gordon Geyer was the president. He was interim president. I don't know the particulars of the grievance, but he intervened to simply say, we're not going to proceed with these grievances anymore. And, and you were concerned about that and wrote it up in, I think, the annual report of 1993-4, and it said you went and talked to the provost, and you and Luana Simon, who was then, went and talked to the to Geyer, and you wrote him a letter, and you talked with UCFA about it. And I think Geyer backed off of it. But that then sort of really raised the question that we need to have a verbiage in the procedure that spelled this out very clearly. And interestingly, Peter McPherson came on just about that time as a new president, and he came, interestingly, like no president had ever done before, with a number of suggestions for the maybe modification, and that was one item that he said that was important. We need to get that worked out. So I think
It was worked out.
Yes, then it was put in. It was put in the procedure. He raised that in '93 when he came, and it was an amendment, among others, to the procedure in 1995. So that is now in it. But I don't know whether that helps you remember the context at all.
So you're asking about why the issue arose?
Yeah, and why you think it was important, but John may have something to add in terms of that. But that's really
I really don't recall the case at all. I would need to have more reference for that. I just don't remember the case itself. So, but I remember now that you gave me the summary. I do remember that we raised it. It was an important issue because I thought that individuals would have a reason to say no to me when I ask them to, join a panel or preside over a hearing and so forth. And I thought it was very important to make sure that individuals are protected, and including myself.
That's very helpful, Michael. If Bob's done with that, I'll move.
Yep.
Letter D was the formal exclusion of the university president, general counsel, and his or her staff and the FGO from being named respondents in a legitimate grievance under this procedure? Do you have any recollections of that story?
Yeah, there were some, not some, there was at least one individual who actually filed grievances in which either I was named or the council was named or the president was named. My immediate reaction to all of that was that it would really harm the very integrity of the procedure itself. It makes no sense to have the grievance official be the subject, be the respondent, because then there's nobody else to run it. You would have to have some kind of an ad hoc substitute, and you don't want to have an administrator. Then how would you, you know, you would need to come up with an ad hoc procedure in order to deal with that. So that made no sense. The same thing, of course, with legal office, because legal office often provided advice to either the FGO office when asked or to the respondents when asked by the respondents. So that made no sense. And, of course, the president is the ultimate decider. So it made absolutely no sense to have it's as if some kind of a case was brought up against any member of the Supreme Court. Made no sense to me. So
that's very helpful, Michael.
Yeah.
And, in fact, near the end of your some point when I was helping you, you would tell potential counsels or presiding officers how the procedure worked, and then I'd talk some about dispute resolution, and we did training things a couple, maybe three times. So I was spending a little more time with your office because of that. There was a case where one of these two frequent filers did grieve you, and you recused yourself and had a professor from another unit serve in your job, and I was presiding officer for that case. So you must have, at least once you recused yourself, and maybe you did it other times I wasn't involved.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm surprised that I did that.
You did.
Remind me. I really don't recall doing that. There must have been some kind of a reason why in one specific case I was willing to do that.
This gentleman grieved against you, and so it just got too, and he was one of the people that had maybe had a dozen of these cases, and it just got too confusing. So
that could very well be. I wanted to be as fair as possible, and I wanted to see the matter probably proceed, and I didn't want to be the obstacle along the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Letter G, 11G, was one of the things that got changed after you left the grievance job, was we no longer have a standing group of people who volunteer or chosen to be either in the main hearing panel potential choice or on the appeals, but instead every professor in the tenure system and a few others can be put on a panel once every 7 years, not more than that. So no longer do we have to recruit people. I mean, they get recruited when they get chosen on a random lottery, and it's sort of like jury service. Did you know about that change or have any thoughts?
No, I was not aware of it.
Okay. It was Kim Wilkes.
Yeah, I used to get the faculty handbook for the first 2 or 3 years after retiring, but no longer. So the last faculty handbook I have dates back almost about 13 years or so. So I don't have, I have no...
That's fine.
Yeah, no reference to the current procedure and the kind of changes that occurred after I retired.
I guess the question to you might have been, how much of a pain in the behind was it to try to have your administrative assistant secretary try to put together panels sometimes?
again, it depended on the time of year in which this occurred, and the kind of case. It was difficult. There's no doubt. It's one of the major reasons why cases used to drag out.
Because so it changed. So when it got done this new way in 09 or 10, no longer was it a group of 100 or 150 that were being selected from who may have been asked to serve within a few recent years. Now it's of roughly 2,000 people, and they only can be asked once every 7 years. So.
Okay. And do you have a feel for whether or not this expedited the procedures?
I think it was a positive change. I think, quite frankly, I think Kim Wilcox, in part, was tired of being a person who was going against what a panel maybe ruled 4-1 or 3-2, and now he was saying, I disagree with that. And I think, quite honestly, he at the time when I would meet with him, you know, he might say, who are these people? They're volunteering to serve, or these... You know, and he might not have said the word, are these activists, but that kind of thing. And why shouldn't it be a broader group of all potential professors? And that sort of then triggered myself, Donna Zischke, and Christine Zako saying, well, if we're going to make some changes, maybe we should look at all our offices' perspectives on other changes. And one of the things that did change was the user's manual that you created, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You had a set of amendments that UCFA had approved, this or that you took to them or they came up with, letters A to G or something. I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay.
One of the changes we did in this 09 time period was that all disappeared and just got put into the procedure.
Ah, okay.
There's no more going to letter Z or whatever it is, G, to figure out what might this say on something. Because that was getting confusing for me sometimes. And and from legal office, they felt sometimes that what it said in the FGP and what it said in the user's manual was not necessarily identical. So they wanted to clarify the relationship of the two.
Okay.
Okay. Can I go to another question?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Another change that's very recent, it was between my service and then there was a person who did just 3 months named Linda Jackson, who has since passed away. At that time, they advertised it as a halftime job. And it's stayed that way ever since. And I wondered if you had any thoughts about that and the relationship of you doing the FGO to your college role, and how difficult was it for you to negotiate both of those, or it wasn't, and any thoughts you have on the halftime job versus what it was for you and I?
I thought that the FGO job was a full-time job. I found enough time to spend on the FGO's duties, but I also, as I recall, I taught at least one course every year, in addition to my job as FGO. And I managed to do that. It was a heavy load, there's no doubt. Kept me busy teaching and handling the grievances at the same time. But I would not have described my job as half-time.
So I agree, and I think Dr. Banks and Professor Rivette both suggested to the provost office or president's office that this wasn't a good idea, but it was done. And what I think I was either taught by you or Bob Banks was it's good to have the FGO be somebody who sees themselves and other people see them as a faculty member, doing some teaching, some research, some writing.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. One thing that's kind of unique about the FGP at MSU is there a couple other procedures for dispute resolution for a couple unique things like anti-discrimination, allegations of misconduct in research, plagiarism, things like that? Was that an issue at all for you, or any recollections of that?
And you didn't mention misconduct in science.
I'm sorry. I meant to. I misspoke.
That's all right. There were instances where it was difficult to determine, you know, under what procedure we should handle a particular issue, because very often an issue that seemed, you know, that started with denial of tenure also seemed to involve possible discrimination on the basis of, you know, race and so forth. But what I try to do is, if in my judgment there was a better than 50-50 possibility that we should really handle it under a different procedure because there are some federal or state laws involved that go beyond our own grievance procedure or university regulations, I usually consulted with either with the legal office, or I went to the office of what was it, affirmative action, or whatever it's called now, to make sure that we handle it through possibly through a different channel. So yeah, it was a matter of having to decide in a very few cases, I would say, whether or not we go through the grievance procedure or another procedure.
Absolutely, and I would say it was, I maybe would see Paulette Granberry Russell a few times in a year, maybe a little bit less with Jim Pavarnik, or a little bit less with David Wright.
Uh-huh.
But there were a few, and it was very useful for me to go talk to them and say sort of what are the issues here, and how might it best be handled. So
absolutely, I spent a lot of time with David Wright.
Okay. I got another one.
Yeah.
11, well, I don't know if it's the right number, but something that's also unique here is the use of administrative reviews for discussing handling cases.
Yeah.
Any comments about how that worked in relationship to the FGP procedures? You remember what I'm talking about?
Remind me.
So if an individual came to me as grievance official and they said, such and such happened to me, but it happened over the last 12 years, and I would say, well, you can't grieve that stuff. The grievance procedure is only a month sort of away.
Right.
But maybe if it's a longstanding issue, maybe your dean or the provost office might be somewhat responsive. And so instead of writing a grievance, write one of these administrative reviews.
Yes.
Asking a dean to review a chair's decision, for example.
As I recall, I did not rely on that procedure or refer an individual to the possibility of that procedure very often, precisely because I didn't think that that it would yield the kind of responses and results that the individual was seeking.
Okay. Next one, it isn't numbered, but another question that I've wondered about. You either inherited or decided that if somebody had a number of cases, the order you would go would be the first filed, the oldest. Is that correct or not?
That's correct.
How did you, was that something you inherited from Brady or LaRue or Miller, or just that you thought that's a sensible approach, or somebody in?
No, I don't think it was a precedent. There was no, I don't recall that there was any precedent to that. There may have been, but I wasn't aware of those, if they did occur. So I decided it would make the most sense to go with the earliest first.
Okay.
Sometimes I was hoping, actually, that if you resolve the first, that it may help to resolve subsequent ones.
So this Dr. Robert Banks next to me has teased me for years. I did it a little differently, and I merged a number of cases and ruled a few cases no longer relevant.
The merging, I can speak about the merging.
Kay.
I did in a few, very few cases, because of the similarity of the issues.
Right.
I did merge.
Consolidation is, I think.
Yeah, especially the ones where we had multiples of cases.
Uh-huh.
It made no sense to deal with them individually because they were really duplicative in the issues that they raised. So it made sense to merge them.
Thank you. I only have a couple more, Michael. It should have been numbered 12, but it's 10 on page 5, the second 10. Did you ever consult, or did anybody in the provost office or general counsel consult for you or with you with other Big Ten or other AAU or other institutions about how did they handle non-union grievances?
No.
Okay. Do you have any other... The last two questions I have. Do you have any other comments, pro or con, about the role experience as FGO, or about any other suggestions of how it might be improved?
I think most of the suggestions that I had, I put in writing and I mm-hmm. brought to the attention of UCFA. Or to the attention of legal office or even the president. As far as suggestions, my major suggestion would be the one where I thought we spent an awful lot of time in specific cases, difficult cases, in which hearing panels, including appeals, decided in favor of faculty, and they were overturned at the highest level. It didn't happen very often, but in those cases in which it did happen, I was very disappointed. And I saw the role of the president as really confirming an appeals panel, unless there was really a very convincing, persuasive reason as to why the decision, the recommendation of the appeals panel should be overturned.
Thank you so much. By the way, so some of the reason Bob and I have some of these details is besides other interviews, we've been spending some time at the MSU archives and historical collections, getting files out of provost office or presidents or whatever. One of the things was a January 25th, 2004 memorandum to John Rivette from Mike Rubner, subject reflections regarding the faculty grievance procedure. And in those three pages, you make a number of suggestions.
Oh, okay.
So I thank you for that.
Yeah.
I'm all done, Michael. I don't know if Bob has a few more.
No, I think
sure.
We began with the questions I had. I think I'm clear on them. Very helpful. We're trying to get this paper put together for 6 or 7 weeks from now, and we've got a bunch of interviews completed, and it's a lot of ground to cover, and so we're happy that you were willing to talk with us again.
No problem. I'm glad that I was able to be of some help. Now, is this a conference that you'll present
yeah,
it at?
It's LIRA, the Labor and Employment Relations Association. It's a big national conference. It'll be held in Cleveland. I've got conflicts, unfortunately. I can't go to the meeting, but John is going to carry the heavy lifting for providing the commentary on the paper. You asked.
I see.
When I talked,
did you contact other universities?
Yes, John may want to talk about that. He's been laboring on that for a long time.
So, Michael, you've probably been asked many times too many to do somebody's SurveyMonkey survey?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a more sophisticated way to do that called Qualtrics. And I ended up being, as an undergrad, I did social psych survey research. And then did it a couple times in grant projects while here at State. And so I got trained in how to do one of these Qualtrics surveys. And Bob and I met and met with different people, and they've given advice, and I must have rewritten the survey a dozen times. Anyways, it's going to each provost office equivalent of their Terry Curry in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And so they're being asked, and the target of the question is about non-union grievance, complaint, and dispute resolution procedures for your non-union faculty and academic staff, which at MSU we now have 5,700 people in that category. About 2,000 are tenure system, but the others are other things. And so we're asking the people at the other 13 Big Ten institutions, how do you handle that?
I see. Now, do you plan to publish this report or article, whatever it is going to be?
Well, I think yes. The question is whether what we have in 4 or 5 weeks' time is going to be a final version. It'll probably be something we'll continue to work on. You asked when I called you up and talked with you some time ago, could I have a copy of this? We'd be certainly happy to share with you whatever we gather at this point, but my guess is it's probably not going to be a final document. One of the things we haven't done a literature review to see what scholars in this area have done. We've got some documents that have been identified, but we would need to do that, and we need to probably look at some additional gathering of information. One of the areas that for me is a major gap is the record of UCFA. Because we have no minutes. But there is a record from your debate and dialogue with them in the annual reports, and we have the 5-yearly reports, but we only have 2 FGOs who lasted long enough to have 5-yearly reviews. That's you and John. Well, no, that's not true. Mary Lee Brady had a 5-year review, which ended up her departing from that role. But in any event, there was a scattering of people with 1 or 2 year assignments at both ends. And so we need to try to do a bit more work.
Right.
Michael, two other quick points.
I wanted to make sure that you know that I'm not using my EDU email that I have, just my other email. I hope that you do have access to that.
Yes, we do. xfgomsu@aol.com, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Michael, okay. two ancillary points. One is, so one of the things we have is every annual report, and there was one written by every FGO. And
yes.
So we've been going through all those, and then sometimes that leads us to, well, to understand this better, we need to look at John Cantlin's papers, or we need to look at Kim Wilcox's paper, so you know that. And as I've said to Bob a couple times, I think this LIRA, which is really going to be about dispute resolution, and to the extent we get responses from the other, from the 14 Big Tens, probably will mostly focus there. But I can think of several other venues where we could publish this, some in more detail using quotes from the people we interviewed, others focusing more on charts and graphs. So I expect it will retain some interest. Bob and I have been talking about doing this for a decade, and and only sort of last year got serious. So
that's good. That's good.
Thank you so very much.
I hope you'll be able to get me a copy when it's done.
Sure. We'll be happy to do that. And again, good to see you again at the Madison 50th year celebration.
It was a lot of fun.
That was a good time. Great.
Yes, it was.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, good luck to both of you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.